Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome to the Christmas program on the Malloy Show here in Christmas 2008, Solstice 2008, Hanukkah 2008. Ah, don't you love it? Yeah, I know. Everything's miserable as hell out there. I understand. It really is. It's just, as a matter of fact, we have some miserable topics to cover as we go through the night tonight. But still, it's Christmas, right? Kathy's looking at me like, what? No, I've always loved this holiday. I love it. I was brought up in Christmas. I love Christmas. We were extremely poor when I was a kid, but it was just the fun of it, you know, the fun of it, and it stuck with me. You know, I just love Christmas. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we're going to get Molly down here before she goes to bed. She's up. Is she watching The Rescuers again?
I think she's moved on to Bambi.
Which
is another lovely, uplifting.
That's where the mother dies.
Yes.
I thought we spliced that out. No,
yeah.
It's in there. Well, I think she's watching The Rescuers. We're going to get her down here at the bottom of the hour. We kind of back-timed it and realized that her little Rescuers, the Disney Rescuers, is over. Just about the bottom of this hour. At the bottom of the next hour, we have a missive from Laura Pickles Bush. It is, in fact, the last White Christmas in the White House for a while, and Laura has forwarded on to the Malloy program, as she has done every year for the past 7 or 8 years, a Christmas greeting. And, yes?
This is our 10th annual Yulapalooza on the Malloy
This
Show.
Is the 10th year
this
we've done this?
This is the 10th year. I figured it up. I took off my socks and counted it up, and it's 10 years. And I just have to say, you know, that Mike had, despite what he says, you know, he had a storybook growing up, a storybook Christmas every year, if the story was Dickens.
Yeah, it was always a Dickensian kind of Christmas, but that's all right. And then at the bottom of the last hour of the program tonight, our reading from the book of Luke in the King James Version of the Bible, the story of the birth of Jesus. So, all in all, a fun Christmas evening with a lot, you know, a lot of horror and negativity interspersed.
What was your favorite Christmas moment from your childhood? The memory that sticks with you the most,
no,
because
they
all make me cry.
That's okay, Kathy.
Was it when you re-gifted your mom's cosmetic contents of her cosmetic bag every year to her, or the time your little brothers nailed the tree together?
That was
the branches they found at the tree lot.
No, that was a good story. When my brothers were, I think Danny was like 7 and Pat was 8, or 8 and 9. I guess they were 8 and 9. And I had since left home. You know, I left home when I was 16. I said, I can't take this anymore. Got out of there. But Pat and Danny were still home. And there was a Christmas tree lot up at the corner of our street in Toledo, and we lived in really a bad section of Toledo. It was working class, but it had already started to go to hell. And there was a Christmas tree lot up there. And as long as Kathy brought it up, and this is one of those many years when we couldn't afford a Christmas tree. So my two brother, I was gone, but my two brothers were still there. So, and my sister. So what they did, about a week before Christmas, they went up to the Christmas tree lot and asked the guy who sold the trees if they could have some branches. And, of course, they lied. They didn't want to tell the truth. They said, could we have some branches so our mom can decorate over our fireplace? Our apartment was about...
Is that what you called the coffee can with the candle in it?
Yeah, our apartment was about the size of a fireplace. But it had been an attic and had been worked over in World War II and turned into a little tiny apartment. So the guy that ran the lot said to my two brothers, you know, you'll have to come back. People like to get those branches to decorate their own mantle pieces. But if you boys come back Christmas Eve, if there's any left over, I'll give them to you. So sure enough, Pat and Danny went back Christmas Eve, and they got all these branches. Well, in the meantime, they had gotten the other pieces together because they had a plan. They had found about a 6-foot length of 2x4 that was, you know, kind of water-soaked and crappy-looking, but they scrubbed it up a little bit and put it into a Christmas tree stand. They actually had a Christmas tree stand. And then they went down and got these branches and came home and found some nails, roofing nails. The people down the street had a roof put on recently. There were nails in the alley. So they found the nails, and they got one of my old man's hammers, and they pounded in all these branches onto the six-foot two-by-four.
I'm going to start crying.
No, it's a funny story. And then they took it up three flights. We lived in a three-story walk-up in this old house in Toledo, and they carried it up the steps, took it in into what we laughingly called the living room, which is really kind of an alcove off the kitchen. And they stuck it back there in the corner and dug around in the closet. We had a closet. And they came up with a couple of strings of lights. One was those bubbling lights that used to be popular back in the 50s, and the other was regular colored lights that were still back in the closet. My parents had been divorced. We were living with my old man, and this stuff hadn't made the trip out of the apartment with our mom. So Pat and Danny found these two strings of lights, and they wove it around the branches that they had nailed into the tree. And then they plugged it in, and that was their Christmas tree. And they took they had a Brownie Hawkeye camera. And so they took some pictures of this thing to show me. I was 17 at the time, I think, and living in a rooming house on the other side of Toledo.
This just gets better and better.
But I was very proud of them because it showed creativity, it showed determination, it showed poverty, it showed panic, and
had the nails in there for Jesus.
That's right. Everything was right there. So when my brother showed me that year's Christmas tree, they showed me the pictures. Rather than just fall apart, you know, I said, "Hey, way to go, boys! That's good work. You guys did a good job."
Talk about the Norn baby.
No, that was just a little doll that my sister had, and she didn't have a whole lot of dolls when we were kids growing up. So for a couple of Christmases there, what we would do is dig around, and we had an area where we kept all of our personal belongings. We four kids, and we dug around in there, and we would get Jean's old little newborn baby. And it was awful. And at that point, it was, you know, it was just a little doll. It had no clothes on it anymore. It was all scarred up. And we would wrap it up in wrapping paper and put it under the tree. And that would be Jean's present from her three brothers. So, you know, all in all, it was a lot of fun. To this day, the smell of oranges reminds me of Christmas, because that was the day that we got an orange. I sound like I grew up in Baghdad or someplace, right?
That would have been an improvement.
It would have. All right. But it was, you know, every family has those stories. Well, no, not every family. No, not
me. I don't have those stories. I remember the time that that mom couldn't get me the Barbie that I particularly wanted, and I was very upset about it.
Yeah, I know. Well, you were very, very middle class, if not a little higher than that. I certainly, you know, fixed that when you married me. But no, you were in that middle class that I and my brothers and sister and parent, or well, my brothers and sister and I, and always aspired. You know, if we can just get to that point where we've got two televisions, we will have made it. But you know, yeah, when I was growing up, it was
Dickensian.
Dickensian. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. 21 past the hour. The Malloy Program on our Christmas Eve, actually tomorrow night, of course, but this is our Christmas program. The right after the next break, we're going to get Molly down here. This the night before Christmas thing started with my son Chris, who on the winter solstice this year turned 30. Well, actually, he missed it by about 10 hours. He was born December 22nd. And when I first started in radio all those years ago, he was about 5 years old, I think. And I had a series of babysitters. I worked late afternoon into the early evening and had a series of babysitters. One night, it was the night before Christmas, just like this. And it was a work night. And the babysitter that I had, this is back when I was a single parent, and couldn't get the sitter. I don't know what happened. Teresa had to do something. She did theater, and I think she had a gig that night or whatever. So I had to bring Chris into the studio with me at my first job. And for a while, he sat out there behaving himself just outside the studio. A five-year-old kid, you know. And maybe it was six, five or six. I guess he was five. So somebody had left. There had been a Christmas party in the office that day, and somebody had left a copy of The Night Before Christmas. And it was sitting out on one of the end tables by a couch in the waiting area where Chris was fidgeting and sitting there. He didn't know what to do. I think I brought some crayons and a coloring book. So I went out during one of the breaks and said, Chris, I'll tell you what, let's when we do the next segment, you come in, sit on my lap. Can you do this? And I'll read The Night Before Christmas to you. And he looked at me like, oh, wow. Okay, Dad. So we went through the commercial break and yada, yada. And I think I said to the audience something like, okay, coming up, my five-year-old is down here with me today or tonight, and we're going to read The Night Before Christmas. So I went to the next commercial break. And the engineer, who was also the producer, looked at me and said, you're going to do this on live radio. I said, yeah, why not? You know, he's a kid. And my engineer said, well, what if he, you know, blows out the F word or something? I said, what are you talking about? He's 5 years old. Yeah, but he lives with you, Malloy. So I said, no, he'll be okay. He's fine. We'll do this. So sure enough, we came back after the next break, and Chris was positioned on my lap, and we read to him The Night Before Christmas. And, you know, he interjected a couple of times, like, what does that mean? The coursers they flew. I said, I have no idea. I don't know what a courser is. I don't know. I really don't. But it's a good poem. Let's go. So that's how this started. And over the years then, as Chris got older, of course, that kind of fell by the wayside. And I thought it was that was it. It was over. And then along came Molly. So a couple of years ago when I think Molly was two the first time we did this, right? We excuse me. I brought her into the studio and read The Night Before Christmas for her. Very reminiscent of Christopher, my now 30-year-old son. But, you know, a whole new wave of doing it. With. So I'm going to get Molly down here in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to do The Night Before Christmas. All right. I wish I had a drink, but it's a little bit too early. You know, maybe in the third hour. We still have an awful lot to do here tonight. Hey, are you not impressed, before we get to this next commercial break, are you not impressed with the way the national news media, especially television, is really on the case where it concerns conversations between Blagojevich and Obama's transition team, or Obama's chief of staff, or Obama's barber, or Obama's banker, or the guy who checks out Obama's groceries. I mean, is this really something? Can you believe this? There are like 50 Bush scandals that are just begging for this kind of coverage. And what is it getting? Nothing. But Barack Obama is from Chicago. Rahm Emanuel's from Chicago. Rob Blagojevich is from Chicago. They're Chicago politicians. Obama gets to be president of the United States. Rahm Emanuel is going to be his chief of staff. Conversation. Okay, what are we going to do about our seat? Well, we want to make sure Blagojevich doesn't give it to a Republican. Yeah, you know, the kid's out of his mind. So they have some conversations. So look at this. It doesn't stop, does it? Even tonight. Who's that? The NBC political director this little nerd, turd, whatever you want to call him, tonight, after everything's been released, everything's out there, he said, well, there's still questions about whether or not this meeting took place at 6 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock, as reported in the report. So we're going to continue to monitor. I am just so proud of my national news media. By God, they are on the case where it concerns Barack Obama and his transition team and a possible conversation about replacing Barack Obama in the Senate. Aren't you proud? Aren't you proud, America? The first to know it.
Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor, he loves you just the same. Santa Claus knows we're all God's children, that makes everything right. So fill your hearts with Christmas cheer, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane.
It is 25 before the hour. Is her rescuers almost over?
Almost. About two more minutes.
All right. Got an email here from Fred regarding what's going on in San Bernardino. The checkpoints by the U.S. Marines, it's happening. Fred, I'm not mocking what you wrote here, Fred. It's just all in caps, and most of it is in boldface, and it says it's happening. And admitted by the California Highway Patrol, they are creating checkpoints with the United States Marine Corps and pulling over thousands of cars, asking for papers, ID, and doing background checks. And then there's about 10 exclamation points after that. Reports from bloggers are scary. Many military trucks and Marines are up and down highway and at checkpoints detaining civilians. A statement from the California Highway Patrol has been issued verifying everything. Please, please bring this up, Fred. I just did. We talked about this earlier, or last week, that this was going to happen. I think we talked about it last week. It seems in direct violation of the law, the Posse Comitatus law. I don't know if anyone else in that part of California is aware of this. Give us a holler, an email, right? From Jen, who writes in, Mike, I don't know how you do it. I applaud you for the restraint you must have when you travel by air. I know now I couldn't do it. Let me backtrack for a moment. I've only flown twice in my life. The last time was when I was 18 years old. I'm 30 plus now, so that gives you an idea of what my last air experience was like, way pre-9/11. Well, today I took my mother to the airport. As a gift, I sent her to see her grandkids, my nieces. I asked her if she wanted me to help her. She agreed. She has a duffel bag with wheels, but also she has her purse and a bag of presents my aunt wanted to send to my nieces. She also had hip replacement 5 years ago, but she never had good use of her legs, so it was hard for her to walk. She was concerned the lamp wouldn't be allowed on the plane. So I waited at the checkpoint for some signal that it was okay for me to go. But as I'm watching her in the line of people trying to get to their gates, I was overwhelmed with anger and hatred at the bullcrap I saw. People practically undressing, taking off belts and shoes. Then I saw this little four-year-old boy holding his shoes in a machine, which I guess was scanning him, but he's looking out at his mother, who's behind this line and can't go toward him. She did her best to assure him. It angered me that American citizens are allowing themselves to go through this kind of treatment. I couldn't even make sure my mom got on the plane because of this blank, blank lie that is 9/11. I felt like I was in a coma and waking up to some sort of Twilight Zone type 1984 bad sci-fi movie scene. If anything, it proves nothing more than the terrorists in the White House, the blankety blanks, one, and the majority of Americans would just lay down and say, go ahead and keep us safe, take all our freedoms. In fact, you want to be a dictator for life? Go ahead. Maybe I'm extreme, Jen writes, but if the flying public is willing to do what I saw today, what else is the majority of Americans willing to allow to happen to them in the name of freedom? All my best to you and yours. Happy holidays, Jen. Yeah, I know it is awkward every time I do fly. Yeah, you know, going through I've got it down to kind of a minimal situation. I'm even reluctant to take a laptop on board with me anymore because of what you have to go through. I've only been singled out for extensive frisk one time. And that was because I think the TSA guy just felt like passing some time. You know what I'm saying? Ready for Molly? Is she? Okay. Let's hold on just a minute. Let me see. What have you got? A little music? Have you got a little music you can play here for a second while I? You don't have 20 seconds. All right. Hold on. Let me see here. Molly. Let's get Molly in here and do the night before Christmas thing, okay? All right, Molly.
What?
Oh, there you are. Come here. Come on. I didn't see you sneak into the studio. Come here. Get up on
the lap. I didn't sneak in there.
You didn't.
I'm all ready to sleep.
You are. I see you got your jammies on. Oh, good. This is called, it used to be called A Visit from St. Nicholas, but they changed the name of it to the first line, The Night Before Christmas.
Oh.
Okay. So let's read it. All right. You want to help me here?
Yeah.
'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring. Not even
a mouse.
The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Just like you have your stocking hung already, right? The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. What's a sugar plum?
Fire to me!
What is it?
A fairy.
A fairy? Mom in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there rose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Look, he's jumping out to go check out the noise. We hear noises out here sometimes in the woods, don't we? Yeah, we do. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and what?
And St. Nicholas.
Eight tiny reindeer, right? With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be
St. Nick.
There he is. Look at those reindeer. I think the reindeer looks spooky.
Why?
Well, look at them.
I
think they do. More rapid than eagles, his coursers, they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Let's do it. Now Dasher. Now Dancer. Do you know the names? Now Prancer. And Vixen. On Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. Oh, Rudolph's not here. He came in later. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop, the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas, too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. What's a hoof?
A hoof is a hoof, hoof, hoof.
As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. What's he doing?
Say shh.
Yeah, he's saying, shh, don't anyone tell, I'm here.
Why?
A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry, and his droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the
snow.
The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. Look at all those toys. My goodness. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, it went straight to his work and filled all the stockings. And then he turned with a jerk and laying a finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, and to his team gave a whistle. And away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, what?
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas, and to all a good night.
And to all a good night. Do you like that story? What do you like about it the most?
All of it.
All of it? We have what? Tomorrow night, Santa Claus will come.
No.
Yeah, tomorrow night, Santa Claus comes. And then when you wake up in the morning, what's there?
Presents.
Presents? Does mm-hmm. that make you happy?
Lots of things on Christmas make me happy.
What does?
Lots of things.
Lots of things make you happy?
Yeah, lots of things on Christmas.
Oh, like hugs and kisses?
Yeah.
And presents?
Yeah.
All right, sweetie, it's time to go to sleep, okay? All right, I'll see you later. I love you. Night-night.
Night-night.
Okay, sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite.
Okay.
Oh, God, you got to love these kids.
Every child must be made to care. Care enough for his fellow man. To give all the love that he can. Will come true for my child and your child too. We'll see the day of glory. I play my day when men of good will live in peace again, peace on earth.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir.
About the same time Nat Cole recorded that, poet Kenneth Rexroth was birthing the Beat Generation. At least that's what Time Magazine accused him of years later. And Rexroth was not too happy with that. But Bear sent me a reminder of Rexroth and a poem, and I want to share it with you. Kenneth Rexroth, who was there at the beginning of the Beats and participated in the California, or I'm sorry, the San Francisco Renaissance that was so so important to the Beat poet movement. It's called A Sword in a Cloud of Light. Your hand in mine, we walk out to watch the Christmas Eve crowds on Fillmore Street, the Negro District. The night is thick with frost. The people hurry, wreathed in their smoky breaths. Before the shop windows, the children jump up and down with spangled eyes. Santa Clauses ring bells. Cars stall and honk. Streetcars clang. Loudspeakers on the lampposts sing carols. On jukeboxes in the bars, Louis Armstrong plays White Christmas. and the joints the girls strip and grind and bump to Jingle Bells. Overhead, the neon signs scribble and erase and scribble again messages of avarice, joy, fear, hygiene, and the proud names of the middle classes. The moonbeams like a pudding. We stop at the main corner and look up diagonally across at the rising moon and the solemn, orderly, vast winter constellations. You say, "There's Orion." The most beautiful object either of us will ever know in the world or in life stands in the moonlit empty heavens over the swarming men, women, and children, black and white, joyous and greedy, evil and good, buyer and seller, master and victim, like some immense theorem which, if once solved, would forever solve the mystery and pain under the bells and spangles. There he is, the man of the night before Christmas, spread out on the sky like a true god, in whom it would only be necessary to believe a little. I am 50, and you are 5. It would do no good to say this, and it may do no good to write it. Believe in Orion. Believe in the night, the moon, the crowded earth. Believe in Christmas and birthdays and Easter rabbits. Believe in all those fugitive compounds of nature, all doomed to waste away and go out. Always be true to these things. They are all there is. Never give up this savage religion for the blood-drenched, civilized abstractions of the rascals who live by killing you and me. Well, I like it. Kenneth Rexroth, entitled A Sword in a Cloud of Light. And thanks, Bear, for sending it in. The San Francisco Renaissance. When I was there a couple of weeks ago, I made it to the outside of City Lights bookstore. I had been there once before, years and years ago, back in 1980, I think. Traveled out, spent about 6 weeks traveling around the West in a friend's car and did a lot of camping. Spent some time on the Northern California coast, but that area of the country is really, really magical, isn't it? I love New York City too, but the California coast, especially from Big Sur on up. Nothing against Los Angeles. Nothing at all. John in San Antonio, Texas, writes in, "Mike, I used to work for Lockheed. I designed electronic warfare systems, death rays. In 1999, Saddam Hussein developed a missile specifically to shoot down the U-2 spy plane. The Dragon Lady, the weapon, popped it like popcorn. It was all over the papers. That weapon was mine. A couple of times I sent you a link to a hobbyist's supply website where, for under $1,000, you can buy a device that will produce exactly the weird electronic snafus you so often have around the studio. From out in the street, you can pack it on a bicycle cargo rack. Cheap, easy, and totally unexpected. I've seen declassified schematics of the same gadget scaled up to be carried by an 18-wheel tractor-trailer rig, complete with big diesel generators and so forth. Such a device could produce exactly the behavior reported by witnesses on the ground after the Wellstone crash. Both Wellstone and Connell went down within a couple of miles of their home airports. That is to say, places where their appearance could be anticipated. But I'm crazy, so I'm sure it's just coincidence." John in San Antonio. Yeah, I'm still getting quite a bit of input about Mike Connell's death. The Republican internet technology guru last Friday in a fiery plane crash. There's an Ohio TV station now that in Connell's, I think it's in Cleveland. Yeah, it's Channel 19 in Cleveland. That is now openly questioning whether or not this was a murder. The segment I think it was last night, started, well, this sounds like a made-up story. One man rigging state elections to help his boss, President George Bush. After it's done, power players in Washington say, get rid of the guy. Do I believe it? No. For now. That was the reporter Scott Taylor of Channel 19 Action News in Cleveland. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is The Christmas Party. Christmas music. Don't y'all love it, huh? Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show on Nova M Radio on for the Christmas program, which we do every year. You said we started this 10 years ago, right, in Chicago. The guy who is now famous, who was with Channel 2 in...
Lester Holt.
Yeah, Lester Holt, who is now on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, he was a local anchor guy for WBBM.
Yeah, and he came and he was a guest on our show.
Yeah, he came
on your show. I say our show. I wasn't a part of the show at that time.
No, you weren't. You were still in an honest line of work. You were still a student.
But I was a guest on the show every Christmas.
Yeah, that's true. You came in every Christmas. But Lester Holt was, he was a local anchor, I think on Channel 7 was our ABC affiliate. And they didn't want to provide anyone for us. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So we went to the competition, CBS. Which is where Lester Holt worked at the time.
We had him come in, and then we had a psychic. Do you remember the psychic?
Jody the coffee psychic?
Jorianne. I actually still remember this woman's name. If she's still listening, wouldn't that be funny? Jorianne the coffee psychic. She told your fortune with a cup of coffee.
Pouring cream into it,
and read the cream swirls. It was the damnedest thing I've ever seen in my life. Only in Chicago, right? Probably Rob Blagojevich had something to do with it. And then we had that woman, and I don't remember her name, from Hammacher Schlemmer.
The real rich
toy store. Yeah, she came in with a bunch of cool holiday toys. It was the first time I saw a robot dog.
Yeah,
and that was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
and it freaked me out. Still freaks me
and
out.
And then we had what was the acapella?
The next year, Stormy Weather, the acapella group came in. That was a lot of fun back then, man. We were low budget, but boy, did we have.
Have you got some of their? You've got some of their music over
doo-wop
there.
Doo-wop Yule Pop.
Doo-wop Yule music, which was kind of cool. We ought to try to work one.
Yeah, I'll find something
from Stormy Weather.
They sang all night.
They did.
We had live music. yeah, in the studio.
Yeah, we did. We had them at various times. We used to bring in kids from the Chicago Youth Symphony
and play. Yeah, I think the next year you had like a flautist and a violinist or something from the Youth Symphony.
Yeah, that was great.
Why don't we have them in here? Can we get some kids here in the basement?
Here in the basement of the Malloy compound in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains? I don't think so. When you're on...
We'll call it a Hummiger Schlemmer woman.
When you're on Michigan Avenue in the Loop in downtown Chicago, it's a little bit easier, I would think.
We've got free parking, though.
We have acres of free parking if people don't mind parking in the woods out here. You know, but... when we worked for ABC WLS in Chicago, yeah, it's much easier to get guests. And it was fun too. We had a good time doing that. That was right before everything went really crazy. I mean, totally crazy. Melissa Etheridge has written something and posted it at Huffington Post. And I want to share this with you. Here's what Melissa Etheridge writes. This is a message from my brothers and sisters who have fought so long and so hard for gay rights and liberty. We've spent a long time climbing up this mountain, looking at the impossible, changing a thousand-year-old paradigm. We have asked for the right to love the human of our choice and to be protected equally under the laws of this great country. The road at times has been so bloody and so horrible and so disheartening. From being blamed for 9/11 and Katrina to hate crimes committed against us, we are battle-weary. We watched as our nation took a step in the right direction against all odds and elected Barack Obama as our next leader. Then we were jerked back into the last century as we watched our rights taken away by Prop 8 in California. Still sore and angry, we felt another slap in the face as the man we helped get elected seemingly invited a gay hater to address the world at his inauguration. I hadn't heard of Pastor Rick Warren before all of this. When I heard the news in its neat little soundbite form that we are so accustomed to, it painted the picture for me. This Pastor Rick must surely be one hate-spouting, money-grabbing, bad-hair televangelist like all the others. He probably has his own gay little secret bathroom stall somewhere, you know. One more hater working up his congregation to hate the gays, comparing us to pedophiles and those who commit incest, blah, 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 same old thing. Would I be boycotting the inauguration? Would we be marching again? Well, I have to tell you, my friends, the universe has a sense of humor and indeed works in mysterious ways. As I was winding down the promotion for my Christmas album, I had one more stop last night. I agreed to play a song I'd written with my friend Salman Ahmed, a Sufi Muslim from Pakistan. The song is called Ring the Bells, and it's a call for peace and unity in our world. We were going to perform our song for the Muslim Public Affairs Council, a group of Muslim Americans that tries to raise awareness in this country and the world about the majority of good, loving Muslims. I was honored, considering some in the Muslim religion consider singing to be against God, while other Muslim countries have harsh penalties, even death, for homosexuals. I felt it was a very brave gesture for them to make. I received a call the day before to inform me of the keynote speaker that night, Pastor Rick Warren. I was stunned. My fight-or-flight instinct took over. Should I cancel? Then a calm voice inside me said, "Are you really about peace or not?" I told my manager to reach out to Pastor Warren and say, "In the spirit of unity, I would like to talk to him." They gave him my phone number. On the day of the conference, I received a call from Pastor Rick, and before I could say anything, he told me what a fan he was. He had most of my albums from the very first one. What? This didn't sound like a gay hater, much less a preacher. He explained in very thoughtful words that as a Christian, he believed in equal rights for everyone. He believed every loving relationship should have equal protection. He struggled with Prop 8 because he didn't want to see marriage redefined as anything other than between a man and a woman. He said he regretted his choice of words in his video message to his congregation about Prop 8 when he mentioned pedophiles and those who commit incest. He said that in no way is that how he thought about gays. He invited me to his church. I invited him to my home to meet my wife and kids. He told me of his wife's struggle with breast cancer just a year before mine. When we met later that night, he entered the room with open arms and an open heart. We agreed to build bridges to the future. Brothers and sisters, the choice is ours now. We have the world's attention. We have the capability to create change, awesome change in this world, but before we change minds, we must change hearts. Sure, there are plenty of hateful people who will always hold on to their bigotry like a child to a blanket, but there are also good people out there, Christian and otherwise, that are beginning to listen. They don't hate us, they fear change. Maybe in our anger, as we consider marches and boycotts, perhaps we can consider stretching out our hands. Maybe instead of marching on his church, we can show up en masse and volunteer for one of the many organizations affiliated with his church that work for HIV/AIDS causes all around the world. Maybe if they get to know us, they won't fear us. I know. Call me a dreamer, but I feel a new era is upon us. I will be attending the inauguration with my family and with hope in my heart. I know we are headed in the direction of marriage equality and equal protection for all families. Happy holidays, my friends, and a happy new year to you. Peace on earth, goodwill toward all men and women, and everyone in between. Melissa Etheridge. Interesting. Interesting email about Rick Warren. And I understand he has scrubbed some of the more hateful stuff from his website. Does that mean anything? I don't know. I have a lot of respect. Like I said, I don't have heroes. I think a hero is nothing but a sandwich. But I have a lot of respect for Melissa Etheridge and her what she has done in her life, her struggles, her demonstrating her courage. So I don't know. You read something like that and you think, indeed. It's about 22 past the hour. Have you been keeping up with what happened to the bailout money that we gave to the big national banks? Huh? They're saying these large banks are now saying they can't track exactly how they're spending the money that we've given them. And most won't even talk about it. Kevin Hine, or Heine, a spokesman for Bank of New York Mellon, which received about $3 billion of that money, said, we're choosing not to disclose that, when he was asked, what are you doing with the money? Thomas Kelly, a spokesman for J.P. Morgan Chase, which received $25 billion in emergency bailout money, said that while some of the money was lent, some was not, and the bank has not given any accounting of exactly how the money is being used. He said, quote, we have not disclosed that to the public. We're declining to, end quote. The Associated Press got in touch with 21 banks that received at least $1 billion each in government money, and that's our money, and asked four questions. How much has been spent? What was it spent on? How much is being held in savings? And what's the plan for the rest? Of the 21 banks contacted, not one chose to answer. Son of a bitch, really? Not one. Well, it's not our money. It's their money. It's not our world. It's their world. Right? Joy to the world. Deck the halls with Boston Charlie, Walla Walla Wash, and Kalamazoo. Oh, man. Now, we're choosing not to answer that question. Thank you very much. We have to go now. We're going to open the phone lines. I think they may be open. The number here is 800-989-1480, if you would like to comment on just about anything. After tonight's program, we will be gone for so long, you're going to forget all about the program. You're going to forget about us. And you're going to think, yeah, whatever happened to the Malloy Show? Oh, Jesus, they probably fired him. We're going to be gone for so long. It'll be January 5th when we are back on the air. And that is an inordinate amount of time when you're doing a radio program to be off the air. But actually, we're only taking 5 working days off. The other days are the holidays that we get anyway, New Year's, Christmas, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, and then a couple of weekends in there. So it just seems like, geez, these people sure take a lot of time off. I guess we kind of do sometimes, don't we? But it's either that or just go crazy. You know, start chewing up the equipment in here and throwing stuff. So anyway, we'll be gone after tonight until January 5th. So if you want to get anything said tonight, now's the time to do it. 800-989-1480 is the number. Is it break time? No, it's not break time yet. When we come back, we're going to play for you what Pickles sent to us. I don't know who helped her record it, but her Christmas message to, I guess she sent it to other radio stations too, right? To other radio hosts? Yeah, okay. So we'll play that for you when we come back.
It just seems that no matter how many times Pickle sends those to other radio stations and other outlets, it only shows up on your show. We're the only ones that ever play it. I feel sorry for her.
I don't quite understand that either. But as long as she sends them, I guess we won't be getting any more. This is it, right?
Goodbye to Pickles.
Goodbye to Pickles. And we listened to her message earlier today, and she does point out that this will be the last white Christmas in the White House for a while. So I wonder if Michelle Obama would be sending out Christmas gifts to or Christmas greetings.
Let's just hope she doesn't put the tree on the Hanukkah card.
No, that was. I don't think Michelle Obama would do that, but that's what the Bushes did.
She's a little, poor Pickle sitting there going, hey, where's this one going?
All right. Stick around. We have we have miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy on the Malloy Program Christmas Show here on Nova M. Stay with us.
Made me stop, walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. Police, stop my car. Police, stop my car. The police made me stop, walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. Police, stop my car. Police, stop my car. The police made me stop, walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. Police, stop my car. Police, stop my car. The police made me stop, walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. They wanna wish me a sober Christmas. That's why.
It's about 25 before the hour. We will have Pickles here in about a minute. Andrew is calling from Waynesboro, PA, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Andrew.
I just wanted to call in. I just wanted to let you know I'm a conservative, but I do appreciate your show. You definitely help provide me with a lot of information that helps me level out my opinion and keep me up to date on everything, because I definitely don't like to be uninformed or one-sided.
Well, thanks. That's kind of you to say, Andrew. If we can just get you to switch over from listening to all that right wing stuff this time next year, we'll have a happy conversation. Here's Pickles.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with my last Holy Day greeting from the White House. We are packing up for our final trip to the Prairie Chapel for a Christmas in Crawford with the whole Bush clan. We always look forward to this most wonderful time of the year, to communing with our loving extended family, stringing up the lights and plugging in Dick Cheney, playing board games like Monopoly or the twins' favorite, Bobbing for Barbiturates, then propping up Pawpaw after his nightly cocktail. This year, the remaining unindicted members of the Bush family are setting up for a rousing game of one potato to decide who will be the next president. Personally, I'm pulling for Jeb, because somebody's got to pardon his brother. But before we depart, I wanted to chat a minute and share with you how much Georgie, the twins, and I are going to miss our time at the fabulous White House. All the family gatherings, the banquets and parties and secret middle-of-the-night coffee clatches in the network of tunnels with those friendly PNAC folks. I'll never forget the 21st birthday bash we threw for Jenna and the other one. They blew out all the candles and a 0.725 on the breathalyzer that night. Such lovely times. Thankfully, we have faint and hazy memories that we can savor for several hours at least. Good thing Carl and Dick were always there with their buddies from National Security, taking photos and videos and setting up boom mics and fancy infrared cameras so that every single minute of our most festive and often rambunctious holiday celebrations would be recorded for posterity from every possible angle. They are so thoughtful and generous, they even made numerous copies of our most precious White House moments and distributed them to safes and lockboxes, airport lockers, and even underground caves in Switzerland. They said backups were always a good idea. They are so kind. And I also want to thank all you little people who, despite your terrible financial sufferings as a result of the recession we inherited from Bill Clinton, have so generously offered to help us pack. The White House Office of Peasant Relations has been literally overwhelmed with letters and email and phone messages and funny little drawings and offers to personally escort us back to Crawford. Now that's the spirit of America I will miss when the Barackas take over. It's a good thing they're moving in on the day we leave. I was afraid we'd have to sell in a down market. Speaking of heading home, we've been busy little beavers around here tidying up for the new residents. Georgie's almost finished filing and cataloging his most important papers in the war room, saving the ones he hasn't finished coloring for the long drive home. He's still got to pardon a turkey and two cabinet members and then pack up his personal autographed Lemony Snicket's collection for the George W. Bush Presidential Library and Puppet Theater. It's hard work, and I've been particularly occupied spiffying up the First Lady's private quarters. I keep it fairly neat anyway, dusting my medicine cabinet for prints every day and dumping the half-empties into the potted fern before my servants bring me my morning Starbucks, Lucky's, and EpiPen. But let's face it, after 8 demanding years of suffrage, the sofa in my sitting area has more burn holes than my mother-in-law's stomach lining. So the house upholstery workers have been hard at it. And you can just imagine what the twins' former rooms look like. The drywall guys finally stopped scraping and called Halliburton to take care of it. They just sprayed the whole place down with some white phosphorus Cheney dropped off for Georgie's farewell tour of Iraq. Now it's sparkling and spotless for those two adorable little darling Bahama girls, Sachmo and Mojita. I had great fun giving them the grand tour of the White House.
showing them the obstacle course they can run and how to play hide-and-seek in the solarium and sliding down the banister, all the things Georgie loves to do. The White House chef wasn't as thrilled. He can't believe he's got another 4 years of SpaghettiOs and Pop-Tarts ahead of him. It is hard work around here. I've heard there's some controversy about giving the First Lady an actual salary for her service, but I say it's about time. After the weeks and weeks I spent toiling as a librarian, I can tell you there's no harder job on earth than being married to my Bushy. And it's been hard on him, too, these last few weeks. First they canceled Smallville. Then his mom was rushed to the hospital with stomach pains. Poor thing. I think she strained herself helping us pack. As soon as she heard the Yo Mamas were coming, she scampered around gathering the china and silver speedier than Sarah Palin's future in-laws with Dog the Bounty Hunter at the door. It's no wonder she tore a hole in one of her stomachs. She never was the same, really, since that house fell on her sister. And if that wasn't enough, my Bushy's been working so feverishly to build a lasting legacy, or at least finish his Lego tower. He so wants to leave something beautiful behind. And then there was that last election. I think the medical team tweaked his meds just a little too much in their attempt to ease him through October and November in a state of partial hibernation. I felt so sorry for him when that senior staffer gently slapped him into consciousness that Wednesday morning, whispering, "Mr. President, Barack Obama's bound for the White House." My Bushy got so excited, his eyes flew open, he spit out his Xanax, he jumped up and shouted, "Yippee, you mean we finally caught him?" After a few hours of explaining, he was so disappointed the rest of the day, he just picked at his cheeseburger pizza and even gave up golf for the whole weekend. But the final straw was that press conference in Iraq. The only thing my Bushy's been trained to dodge are subpoenas in military service. Now, he is used to fielding softballs from reporters, but I was proud of my athletic husband's almost feline reflexes when that ungrateful heathen lobbed his loafers. As you can tell by that video, my Bushy's been working out a lot. In fact, he's been practicing daily duck and cover drills in the backyard ever since Cheney shot that lawyer in the face. That's really paid off for him. But I was miffed at his Secret Service detail. I asked them why they didn't stop the second shoe, and their only explanation was that they couldn't stop laughing. Condi was upset over the incident, too. Iraqi officials confiscated the shoes before she had a chance to thoroughly examine them and interrogate the journalist and find out if they came in a size 7 teal alligator slingback. You would think the Iraqis would be more grateful for all this fine Christian liberating Bushy's been doing over there. I asked Prime Minister Maliki about this inexplicable ingratitude, and to his credit, he apologized. In fact, he's been meaning to send a thank you card, but it seems all the Baghdad Hallmark stores keep blowing up or something. Well, I see the servants are down to the last few crates, and I want to toss in my best double knits before they hammer down the lids, so it's time to skedaddle to the ranch. We just have to throw the suitcases in the trunk and draw straws to designate the driver and find some small, shiny object to distract my Bushy while Cheney loads the football. Last year we were tardy and the cousins had practically emptied the silo of Lone Star and were making a festive green punch out of NyQuil and Sprite, and we were saving that for New Year's. Plus, Sarah Palin's providing the turkey and Cheney wants a chance to waterboard it before she pops it into the big aluminum funnel. Oh, and I wasn't going to think about all that torture stuff this week. Christmas is not the time to ruin our beautiful minds with images of bloody, brutalized, and martyred Middle Eastern men. That's what we celebrate at Easter. So I'll just close by saying happy holy days and God bless almost all of you. Thanks for sharing the last white Christmas in the White House with me and my Bushy.
Her and her Bushy. Thanks, Pickles. That was very sweet. Laura Pickles Bush, ladies and gentlemen, with the last greeting from her. It's just hard to say anything. I'm just so underwhelmed by what I just heard. I mean, it was just incredible. We've shared Christmas greetings from Laura Pickles Bush for how many years? When did she first start sending that out? About 5 years ago?
About five years, yeah.
5 years? Well, I think I'm glad we got that. I'm glad we got that. All right, we have a break coming up. When we come back, we'll work in a couple of phone calls here and move on to the top of the hour. Coming up at the bottom of the next hour, the reading from the King James Version of the Bible, the book of Luke.
She brings cold beer to me and cortisol sums. A birthday song they sang with mighty big lungs. Across the bar they hang her rubber tight thumb. Double D plus, had her boots done. Then she smiled at me, I'll tip a big ton. Me and my chums. Look at them guns.
You know you love Elvis doing Christmas carols. You know you do. It's about 9 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the Internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike. Joyous Festivus to you, Kathy and Molly.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Back at you.
All right. I need to air a grievance here.
Go ahead. Air it.
About that Rick Warren thing.
Yeah, okay.
I think the selection of Rick Warren...
Yeah.
To deliver the invocation at the inauguration was unnecessary and cruel.
I do, too. And I wonder if it's because Barack Obama doesn't realize that when you reach out to some of these people, you're going to get back a bloody stump.
Nope. I don't get it. I don't get it. He just, like, pour salt in the wound. I mean, you know what I mean? He was a major proponent of Proposition 8. And then he goes and pours salt in the wound of gay and lesbian Americans and their supporters. By choosing somebody who was a major proponent of it, it makes no sense, and there's no justification for it. And I don't care, you know, Melissa Etheridge can say what she wants, but, you know, it just does not get right with me.
It doesn't with me either. I don't trust these people. I don't understand this piece by Etheridge that showed up at Huffington Post yesterday, I think. If we just take it at face value, we are to believe that with one phone call and meeting with this guy, Etheridge is willing to, I don't know, overlook or step aside all the venom and bigotry and disrespect and hate that this guy has put out. Okay, so he likes her albums.
Does he even really, if I were her, I would have asked him for, like, detailed questions.
Yeah.
About, like, liner notes on all my albums, just to test them to see, because anyone can say that.
Well, that's
so
true.
I have all your albums. Like, yeah, right.
And as long as they're both famous people and they're going to appear at this same event that she was that she wrote about, why not in her phone call say to him, ask him some specific questions about his point of view? Say, Rick, you love my, or Reverend Warren, whatever she calls him, you like my music, you like my performances. What is it that you have against who I might love? I think she missed a golden opportunity to zero in on this guy and ask him some specific questions. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Well, why do you, exactly do you think I don't have, I shouldn't have the same rights available to me that you do, that you and your wife have?
Well,
how does my relationship affect yours in any negative way? It's just, it's ridiculous.
I know.
I've been steaming about this Rick Warren thing for a week, and it's not even so much the choice, it's the justifications.
Yeah, you know, I have too. There's so many other issues that are so much more important, so much more critical. I don't know why I'm hung up on this, but I am.
You know why? Because I think it shows, I didn't think Obama had a growth streak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this shows. It shows, you know what, he's not stupid. He's not a stupid man.
No.
He had to know that people would be hurt by this. And his, you know, just the lame excuses he gave for it just shows that he doesn't care. He doesn't care that this hurt people. That's what I got from it.
That's about all that one can get from it. I've noticed one thing during the campaign. During the illness of his grandmother and subsequent death of his grandmother, I hate to say this because I don't like this 10-cent psychoanalyzing from afar, which I'm about to do, but I get the sense sometimes that Barack Obama is lacking an emotional trigger. I've never seen him other than just Mr. Cool. You understand what I'm saying?
Too composed, too collected.
Detached.
Yeah. It's almost like even Tom Hartman kind of flips out a little bit. Tom Hartman is like the most composed, collected person I'm aware of. And even he kind of, like, you can hear him fighting back the cuss words and
right.
trying to keep control. You can see there's a struggle, but it doesn't seem like that's there for Obama.
I know. He just kind of skims across the surface. Excuse me. And not in the same. I think, you know, Bush did that, but that's because Bush was amoral. Bush was a sociopath. I really don't think that Barack Obama's that way. I sometimes get the feeling that he's afraid that if he does show emotion, or if he does refuse to, go along, get along by inviting this bigot to give the invocation, that somebody's going to jump out of the bushes and yell at him and say, you know, you're not equipped to bring us together. Well, I've got news for Barack Obama, if he hasn't figured this out already. The right-wing freak monsters in talk radio are sharpening their spears. They're going to be on this guy like a white on rice for the next day.
Of course they will. It's going to make the Clinton years look like a tea party.
Yeah, any reaching out. I swear to God, at this point, I wouldn't be reaching out. I would be trying to, build walls, not bridges. These people come across the bridges and pee all over your house. Get off of my bridge. I don't want to make peace. Let them make peace with me. You understand what I'm
saying?
Exactly.
Exactly. They're the ones who've screwed everything up.
Right.
The ones who've screwed everything up. They're the ones who need to make peace with us.
They're the ones
who apologize for the damage they've done.
Amen. Amen.
And, and if you're going to do any reaching across, it should only be to punch him in the face. That's my Christmas message.
That's mine, too. Paula, thanks. Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year, too, Mike.
Okay, take care. Yeah, I've said that before, too. The only reason to reach across the aisle is to, give one of these guys a black eye or a bloody nose, right? Bap, bap, bap. Take that, sucker. We'll be right back. Well, no, we won't. We'll be back in the... after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
May your days be merry, oh, merry, bright. Lord, have mercy, I'll waste all of the money. And may all your Christmases be so white, all the white.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on our Christmas program that we do every year. For those who notice what appears to be a hideous contradiction in what we're doing on this program tonight and my take on Christianity, that I pretty much keep out there in front during the rest of the year on this program. Let me just clarify for a moment. The people who have commandeered the message of Christ, if he existed at all, or I should say Jesus, if he existed at all, have really perverted that specific simple message. And I'm not talking about the priests and the Pharisees of the past 10, 15, 20, 25 years. I'm talking about the liars and sneaks and cheats and thugs over the past 2,000 years. I mentioned before on this program that I think the church, the established Christian church, has done more harm probably than any other institution on earth where it concerns the pain and suffering that it has dumped on the human spirit. By the same token, there are a lot of individuals who subscribe to the teachings of Jesus who have done incalculable good when no one else would. So there's a paradox, there's a dichotomy, there's a contradiction in this whole thing for me, possibly for you. What we are celebrating tonight is the idea of peace, the idea of the personification, the making human of peace, justice. No matter how you see that, whatever you call that, you may call it Islam, you may call it Christianity, you may call it Judaism, you can call it anything you want. But this particular idea of peace and justice is one that certainly has we humans have not been very good at pinning down. We talk a good story about it all, but when it comes to actually applying it, we really do fail. So for anyone who is listening tonight who senses a monumental or appalling contradiction, please understand that what we celebrate when we do these Christmas shows is the idea, the promise, the thought that every thinker, every philosopher, every secular humanist, and some religious people have tried to put out there for centuries, and that is the idea of treating each other with love and respect. That's what this is all about. The fact that some fairly powerful music has been written and composed around this holiday, I think, is incidental to the holiday itself. I don't know why some of these massive pieces of music, I think about all the various pieces of music that have been written. The Messiah always strikes me as just monumental. How the composer, how Handel could have written such a just incredible piece of music. I'm sure that most people who listen to this program on a regular basis don't have any problem with what appears to be a contradiction. But just for the record, I just wanted to get that out. A couple of emails. First of all, hi, Harvey Fierstein. I'm sure you're familiar with him, the Broadway actor and Hollywood actor, for that matter. In response to the Rick Warren thing, wrote a couple of quick paragraphs here. He says, a couple of boys were calling my best friend a faggot one unhappy day at summer camp. Courses of action seemed slim to my adolescent mind. I could stand up for Jack, branding myself a fag as well and ensuring myself a miserable summer. Or I could join in with the name callers, lose my closest friend, but assure my standing with the majority. I sacrificed my friend on the altar of popularity. I don't think I need to tell you that political expediency was a terrific short-term solution, but a long-term nightmare. My summer concluded uneventfully, but none of those boys became my friend, nor did me any favors. And 40 years later, I still feel the loss of Jack along with a piece of my self-respect that I can never win back. Mine was an act of cowardice and betrayal. It seems Obama is now maneuvering through the summer camp of his political adolescence and is about to make the same bad choice as I. He can call the placing of a hate monger like Rick Warren on the world dais political healing or inclusiveness or any other nicety he'd like, but I call it pandering to the lowest instinct of the worst kind of politics. President-elect Obama, your victory was made possible in no small part by the votes and wallets of the gay and lesbian community along with our supporters. Turning your back on us does not make you more mainstream American. It just makes you a coward. Harvey Firestein. And KF writes in, if you'd watched Rachel Maddow tonight, you'd have to revise Melissa Etheridge's editorial. Warren is accusing the gay community of using hate speech when they take his actions to task. And he condemns us as Christophobic, which is probably true when Christ marauds the land and the personage of smug televangelists. Let me first say that Melissa and her partner were too lazy to get married in California prior to Prop 8, so she only faced Warren as a domestic partner at best. I remember the way Christians relished the gay plague as a wrath from God. They were cheered by our pain and our loss as evidence of a great cosmic cleansing of sin, never considering that perhaps the AIDS crisis was a test for compassion, a test which they failed terribly and have never felt compelled to apologize for. Secular society made up the difference in AIDS jokes and selfish panic. In the glare of Prop 8, popular Californians have completely neglected the fact that adoption rights were stripped away from Southern gay couples on Election Day as well. Nor has Melissa's new pal, Pastor Warren, seen fit to react to Ken Starr's quest to erase the existing gay marriages that remain there. Christians have no concept of tolerance. I have to tolerate the loss of my progressive radio station, which was converted to a Catholic radio station this morning. Merry Christmas. This on top of the Pope's declaration that heterosexuality needs at least as much protection from homosexuals as the Amazon rainforest needs protection from industrial development. I am cast as an intruder, apart from God's creation, just as surely as I'm absent from Pastor Warren's definition of a purpose-driven life. KF. Yeah, it's impossible for me, and so I tend to just talk about it on this program, whine and bitch and complain about it among some friends, and then just turn away from it because the idea that Barack Obama would invite someone like Rick Warren up on the stage. I can't, and I can turn away from it because, well, no, on second thought I can't because it does affect me directly. I have family members who happen to be gay. And can't, even though I don't share that orientation, I can't turn away from it. It's extremely offensive. Every once in a while, some of the stuff I think, well, you know, it doesn't directly affect me. It does, even if I mean, anything that happens in this political realm directly affects me. It affects you too. And in turning away, we're just saying, I don't care to be in this family. I really don't.
Sending Christmas cards,
hangovers,
rigging up the lights,
and finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, 5 months of bills.
Sending Christmas.
cards, hangovers, rigging up the lights,
and finding the Christmas tree.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, back to some phone calls here. Roger is calling from Brooklyn, listening on the internet. Hey, Roger.
Michael, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Happy holidays to you, Kathy, and Molly.
Thank you. Back at you.
Yeah, I was wondering. I wanted to get your take. And did you hear about the story on Friday, Michael Connell? I mean, maybe...
Oh, yeah, we talked about it most of last night's program.
Did you? All right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I missed
last
night.
No problem. No problem.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess obviously you and a lot of the listeners feel that it's quite suspicious and...
I do, and there's a lot of a determination in the blogosphere to not let this story just disappear the way mainstream media, with the exception of reporting it on New York Times website.
Well, Mark Crispin Miller was on...
on Democracy Now.
Yesterday, and his that was incredible. I mean, I watched it three times just to get all the information that he put out.
We had the transcript. You can get the transcript from Amy Goodman's website. You can and read
right.
it at your leisure. And I'm sorry. I just can no longer accept all this stuff. It's just pure simple coincidence. It's staggering. It's mathematically impossible for this number. I'm just saying that not as a mathematician and certainly not as a statistician, but to my little brain, it's mathematically impossible for all these people to die in all these different ways, whether they're strokes or plane crashes or whatever they are, and all of them have something that would be pertinent to revealing the rotten side of this whole filthy administration. It's just unbelievable.
If you go to where I found some information was on the RAG blog. blogspot.com.
The RAG?
I could send you the link. You want me to send you the link?
Yeah, send it to me. Sure.
Because it says that these guys, Cliff Arnebeck and Bob Fritrakis.
Fitrakis, yeah.
Fitrakis.
Right.
Had continued to question him about his involvement, IT operations for the GOP, accessing Roe's email files, and the circumstances behind their disappearances. Apparently, Roe was threatening him directly, and the White House was incredibly agitated about the fact that he started to say that he wanted to speak more about what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, another interesting thing that I saw today, Roger, and send that to me, Roger. Send me the link. At YouTube now, it's up. When I saw it today, it only had about 300 hits. The first people on the scene with a video camera of the plane crash near the Akron, I think was it the Akron airport? And it's an 8-minute long video. And if you just, I guess if you search for Michael Connell plane crash, you'll find it. The crash site is, in fact, a raging inferno. And the first reports out, and I don't know, you know, first reports are invariably wrong or exaggerated one way or the other or downplayed one way or the other. But the first reports out were that he had run out of gas and had crashed, you know, a mile and a half or 2 miles from the runway of the airport that at which he was trying to land. And yet, if you look at this video, it is obviously, and this I do know, it is obviously a fueled fire. This is not just a plane. You know, a plane with no gasoline that hits the ground doesn't do this. God damn it. It's just like the buildings coming down in New York on 9/11. You know, they just don't do that. I'm just about reached the end of my rope of how much of this, you know, you, all of us are supposed to just swallow and say, oh, yeah, okay. I get it. That's just the way it goes. That's just the way it happens. Yeah, okay. But if you get a chance, look at the video. It's up at YouTube. You can find it. And you make your own decision as to whether or not you think that is an airplane that is out of gas. Now, I'm not saying that the out of gas story is etched in stone. Maybe he had full tanks. But he had just flown from Washington, D.C., to Akron. So I don't know what the capacity is of a Piper Super Cub gasoline tank on one of those small aircraft. I have no idea. But I'm just sick of having this fed to me. Well, it just happened that way, Mike. Don't put on your tinfoil hat. I get that from one end of the so-called news spectrum. From the other end of the news spectrum, I get silence. It's getting irritating. Before the hour, we had some debate here on the program about whether or not to play Oh Holy Nightmare again tonight. We decided no. No. If you were tuned in last night, you heard it. And I think once a year is about all I can stand. So if you're waiting for that, no, I don't think so. Oh, God. Back to some phone calls here. Let me see. Tom is calling from Indiana, listening on the internet. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Is this our own Tom?
Yes, I'm your humble and obedient and confused servant.
Tom has been the administrator at our website since God was a teenager.
Well, at least a couple of months ago.
Yeah, right. Well, how's the website going, but what's up? What's going on?
Oh, I've already emailed Kathy. I'm having trouble getting the website up, and she seems to be able to get access to it. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe I need a bailout fund.
We'll figure. We'll figure it out. But I think that's it. I think if we apply for some of the money, we can get everything working again on the message board.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I decided to hang on and try to get and just wish everybody a little happy holiday and, you know, peace be with us all. And with no request to send funds in to get some kind of prosperity rag, you know. So
I hear you. I hear you.
Anyway, I came across one little article tonight that I don't know, it just seems to fit this season.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what a Ponzi scheme is.
Right.
But people don't know where the name Ponzi comes from.
Yeah, it comes from the guy Charles. Was it Charles
Ponzi? Charles Ponzi from right around 1920.
Yeah, yeah.
And people, if they want to find out a little bit more about it, can go to
Go to Wikipedia.
Just
go to Wikipedia and type in Charles Ponzi, the whole thing.
And it seems to kind of match exactly with that, the new guy. I guess we're going to have to say the new Madoff.
Yeah, that's the ironic part of his name. he made off with billions. And the thing about Charles Ponzi, here, just one more cross to bear for the Italian-Americans back at that time. When the Ponzi scheme was first developed, there was a lot of anti-Italian sentiment in this country. It wasn't that long. It was right around the period of time with the Sacco and Vanzetti case. I can remember my mother telling me that when the Ponzi scheme hit the newspapers, it was just one more example of, see, those dirty Italians! You know, now that's been applied to just about every ethnic and religious group in America, so no surprise there. All right, Tom, thanks, man.
Take care.
Happy Christmas to you, and thanks for all the work you've done on the message board at MikeMalloy.com. Tom's been hanging in there for what? 8 years? 9 years? 10 years? We used to get together in Chicago and drink beer and have parties with some of our listeners. We don't do that anymore, do we? Oh, well. Well, it's because we don't live in Chicago, right? But our the folks that tune into this program are so scattered now. I mean, they were when we were in Chicago, too, but we had that big Chicago listening base. And we get together down in Hyde Park. We get together in Lakewood. Was it Lakewood where Nancy lived? Was that the neighborhood? Lakeview. We get together at Uptown. We get together down Grant Park. You know, just hang out, drink beer, get rowdy, nasty, ugly, raucous, talking about these filthy Republicans and the attacks on Clinton. This is back when Clinton was under siege. Ah, it's like talking about your ute, right? I remember back in the day. All right, we want to share with you now, we being Kathy and me, we don't use the editorial we around here all that often, or the royal we. It's, when we say we mean a couple of us. Luke chapter 2, verse 1, verses 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, and 14. In the King James version of the Christian Bible, the story of the birth of Christ is told through Luke. I've always found this to be awesome, and it has nothing to do with the Christian religion, if you understand what I mean by that. So here it is, the story of the birth of Christ is told through the Gospel of Luke. From the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verse 14. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly, there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary, and Joseph, and the babe, lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. Isn't that pretty? That's a great story. That's a great story. So many creation myths or religious stories are just profoundly gripping, aren't they? Always have been to me, regardless of the religion. We'll be back after the break. Before the hour, Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineers the program every night and also answers your phone calls, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor and podcast manager, and four new additions to our unpaid advisory staff this year, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who we have designated our ethical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, our economic advisor. And as always, the executive producer of the program is Catherine Bay. Who we got here? Judy is calling from Miami, listening on the Internet. Hey, Judy.
Yeah, no, actually Hollywood, Florida. I'm a little bit north.
Okay.
it's weird. It's like crazy. Not only is he, is this, that crazy guy going to speak at the inaugural, but I heard that he was invited to Atlanta for the Martin Luther King Memorial just days before.
You're talking about Rick Warren?
Yeah.
I haven't heard about that.
Well, I heard it this morning.
Yeah, really? Huh.
Mm-hmm. That sounds... No, well, no, this is like crazy. I mean, he's like, he's like anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, anti-women's rights. Mm-hmm. That is awful.
Well, I do know that one of Rick Warren's religious heroes, another preacher at one time, made terribly disparaging remarks about black folk. Rick Warren ought to, in my opinion, just stay with milking his flock, getting all he can get, getting his ego satisfaction, standing up in front of 7, 10, 15,000 people every Sunday or whatever he does, and writing his books. And, you know, somewhere in the Bible, I'm sure it talks about people who use the Word of God, as someone like Rick Warren has used it, as a means of self-aggrandizement. Something about being cast into hell. Oh, well. Bob is calling from Dallas, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you? Merry days.
Merry what?
Merry days.
Merry days?
And may the God of your choice bless you and your staff.
That's ecumenical. I like that. Merry days. All right.
Hey, it really must be a sign of the times when the vice president doesn't invest in the country and takes this money out of the country. And George, poor guy. I feel like the nation is being sabotaged like his brothers sabotaged the savings and loans.
Well, yeah, it is. It is. I mean, there's not much that good that has happened in the past 8 years politically. Not much at all. Thanks, Bob. Marge has been hanging out tonight, listening via the telephone. Hey, Marge, we're about out of time.
Merry Christmas, friend. I had to listen to Pickles. That was something else. Is that going to be on your website so I can tell my son about it?
Is it, Kathy? Yeah, Kathy's going to put it up. I'm not sure when she's going to do that, but
whenever.
She'll get it up. Yeah.
I just wanted to hear Pickles, and I wanted to wish you happy holidays and safe travels to you and everybody that works with you and for you and all that good stuff.
Well, thanks. That's very kind, Marge. I appreciate it. Back at you, okay?
Thank you, and take care.
All right, sweetheart. You too. Robert is calling from Virginia, listening on XM. Hey, Roger. Robert?
Hey, it's funny. Sabotage, he says, from the French, referring to the placement of shoes in the machinery during the French Revolution to gum up the works and protest. But anyway, good to hear you back on the radio again, Mike. I'm just driving down for Christmas with the family.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I just caught you when you were talking about the Wellstone crash and the letter from that guy at Raytheon or wherever it was, and that directed energy equipment.
Uh-huh.
That's very real stuff. I would invite anybody to Google HARP or directed energy.
Yeah.
And follow those links and see how it all fits together in that respect. Very powerful, and no one's really even talking about it. But good to hear you bring it up, and have a good Christmas. Or I guess it's Festivus Day today.
Yeah, well, Christmas works for me. Thanks, Robert. Drive safely, okay?
All right, Mike. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Take care. Yeah, the directed energy thing, the HARP program. It's not crazy. It's not. You don't have to be out of your mind to think about these things, to investigate these things at all. It's really real stuff. It really is. That's the part that I can't quite get my mind around is how. People write all this off as tinfoil hat stuff or conspiracy stuff and say, and are so willing to just blindly buy or accept the official story. I don't care what it's about. It can be about Mike Connell's plane crash or the death of Paul Wellstone and his family or whatever. But blindly accept it? No thanks. I think I'll pass on that one. Hey, listen, have a nice Christmas and Hanukkah, and enjoy the winter solstice, and Happy New Year, okay? Take care. I want to see you guys January 5th when we'll return. Merry Christmas. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Then peel the